Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Hello listeners, it's 2 o'clock on Tuesday, which means it's time for Kosher Cravings. You're with Dolores Fache or Food by Flavors. And I'm here to share an hour with you talking about flavors, kitchens, sitting around a table, which is my favorite pastime, and just chatting about food. We'll talk to two special guests. But before we launch into our interviews, let's just talk about what food means to us. And I often say we all have so many books and so many recipe books around us. And if you can get one thing out of one book, it's just worth the 400, 500, or 600 rand that we've paid for that book. But Ottolenghi has always been a go-to person for me. He's just been so authentic always in his offering to the public. I'm sure you're all familiar with his beautiful salads and vegetable creations. And today I just happened to open his book called Simple, which really is simple. And I just want to share with you the introduction because it just kind of epitomizes everything I feel about food. And I would love to just give a sense of that to you. And I'm sure so many of you feel the same way. So in his introduction, he says, "There are all sorts of ways to get a meal on the table, depending on the sort of cook you are. One person's idea of cooking simply is the next person's culinary nightmare. For me, for example, it's about being able to stop at my greengrocer on the way home, pick up a couple of things which look good, and make something within 20 to 30 minutes of getting home. My partner, Carl, on the other hand, has a completely different idea of what simple cooking is. If we're having friends over on the weekend, he'll want to spend a good amount of time beforehand, prepping and cooking as much as he can, so that very little needs to be done when our guests are around. There are other ways too. Esme prefers to be in the garden at the weekend rather than kitchen bound. So her idea of simple cooking is to put something in the oven in the morning and leave it simmering away, ready to be eaten 4 or 5 hours later. Tara, on the other hand, who leads on the writing of all of Ottolenghi's books, can't really relax without knowing that a meal is basically ready a full day before it's due to be eaten. Sauces in the fridge, stews in the freezer, veggies blanched, roasted, and ready." So there we go. That was from Ottolenghi himself. And I think what it kind of imbues to all of us is that whatever our different approach, we all have to present food at some point in our lives. We all have to be in the kitchen at some point. But making it look effortless and easy when friends and family come to eat at us, that's what it's really about, and spending that time with those people around the table. Different for everyone. So I know we're in the 9 days. Some people are observing it. Many people are observing it. So I'm going to really focus today on salads and bowl food and just easy recipes to get us through the 9 days. And one recipe that I came across a while ago, and I've been doing so much during winter, it was a winter nourish bowl, which is a cozy nutrient-packed bowl with roasted sweet potato, fluffy quinoa, crunchy nuts, and a creamy tahina drizzle. This to me is pure comfort food in every bite. So let me share with you what we do. 4 large sweet potatoes, which you cube, you can roast them. So easy to roast. A little bit of salt, pepper, olive oil on a piece of parchment paper in the oven. Very quick. If you want the process to be even quicker, you can put your potatoes in the microwave for a few seconds before, or you can put them in the microwave and then boil them however you wish. I love to roast mine. So as I said, 2 large sweet potatoes cubed, salt, pepper. I love the molten salt for that. And a dash of good quality olive oil in the oven. And 3/4 of an hour later, you have delicious, crunchy sweet potatoes. You're going to have 1/2 cup of quinoa, which you've prepared in a saucepan on the stove top. Have ready 1 cup of any good veg broth or veg stock. There's so many on the market if you don't want to make your own. I love the Ina Parman. To me, it has no MSG. It always works. It's just handy, always in my kitchen. You're then going to have 1 or 2 big bunches of kale, which you've massaged with some olive oil. I actually love to put some salt with it and massage it with salt and chop it very, very finely. If you don't want to use kale, you can use baby spinach. We have so many available options across our green grocery stores, truly. So whatever tickles your fancy, you can use. To that, you're going to have 1/3 cup of pomegranates. 1/3 cup for this particular recipe, I used hazelnuts, but you can use any nuts that you have in your pantry. You know me, I love to toast my nuts. I always have toasted nuts on standby where I keep, I have my pine nuts, my almonds, my Brazil nuts, my cashews, everything all toasted. I keep them in glass console jars, tightly closed, and I've always got roast nuts ready and handy to just kind of embellish any meal, any salad. So there you've got your third of a cup nuts and a third of a cup of crumbled feta. Combine all of that together in a bowl, fluff it all up. You can layer it if you wish. I actually just created one bowl and I packed out four bowls and four of us ate this delicious meal. So it's not a soup and it's not a roast veg. It's just a combination of both. I served it warm. And lastly, I put my pomegranate seeds over. And then I made a dressing with 2 tablespoons of tahina, 1 tablespoon of maple syrup, 1/2 teaspoon of whole grain mustard, and a good squeeze of fresh lemon juice. And again, lemon juice is one thing I don't like to shortcut. Rather use the real lemons, squeeze them, much better than a bottle. And of course, your 1 tablespoon of olive oil. You fluff that all together, and there you have an amazingly healthy, beautiful, cozy, nutrient-packed bowl for winter. We're going to now talk to my first guest on the show, who is Saul Mervis. Saul is the founder of not only the Grill House, he now has 4 Nos Bakeries, which I'm sure is familiar to all of you, as is the Grill House. Welcome, Saul, to our show.
Thank you. Hi, Dolores. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, sure. So I know you're busy with opening stores all over Johannesburg with 4Nos, but before we launch into that, tell us a bit about you, your journey, how you launched into the food industry, just your experience to date, and then we'll talk more about the details of your different offerings to the public.
Okay, that's quite
a loaded question. A loaded question, I'm sure.
Like I always say, I think, and you might concur with this, that people to get into the food industry, not many of them do it by choice. It's kind of you fall into it by mistake. It's something that you had to do, whether you were studying at varsity and trying to earn money waitering, or whether you were just in between traveling and you decided to work at a restaurant because it was easy, unskilled work at the time, certainly
for sure.
When I was a student.
For sure.
And that's how I kind of got into it. And I think if you develop a love for it and a passion for it, and it can be extremely rewarding. And I kind of, here I am 35 years later.
For sure. So when you first launched into the industry, what was your entree? Like, how did you enter the industry? With what offering, or what did you do?
My very first background as a school kid was working as a waiter in Spur. Mm-hmm. Then throughout university, I worked in different restaurants, and eventually they were opening the first that was called Late Night Owls in those days.
Yes.
In Mill Park. And I started working with them part-time and eventually full-time. My plan was actually to emigrate. I was going to make Aliyah, and I had 6 months to kill, and I never really left. And then the Late Night Owls became the Grill House. Yeah, and we grew the Grill House group, and here I am. It's just been quite an organic growth.
That's amazing. And tell me, I know with the Grill House, you've always kept your focus quite tight, right? Your menu,
yeah.
But have you had to evolve over the years? Have you had to explore new offerings? Has the market changed? Have you seen trends kind of dictate to you what you had to introduce into your restaurants?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because we talk about that all the time, and especially now more than ever before. We used to travel a lot, particularly before COVID, and we used to try and get ideas. In fact, the Grill House currently where it is now in Rosebank, which we built 33 years ago, was the first of its kind white tablecloth Grill House. We then identified the need to elevate normal family steakhouse. There were lots of different steakhouse changed then to a Grill House offering. We were the first to bring the big Kitka to the table and the big steak knives, and subsequently, and we quite flattered, a lot of places have followed that trend.
Mm-hmm.
But now all of a sudden and we've actually prided on ourselves on doing what we do consistently. Like people say, well, what's like the recipe for
it's consistency,
and I think it's
for
consistency.
Sure. For sure.
I think it's people coming in and if you can exceed their expectations or at least meet them every time. And we South Africans are steak and potato people. We
mm-hmm.
meat and potato, so trends come and trends go. But ultimately, South Africans love to have a good steak and baked potato or portion of chips or cream spinach. It's a very typical meal.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, there is a need to start evolving slightly. There are different trends in the market, different health issues in the market that people are chasing.
Yeah.
And I think also people go out looking for something slightly different. So if you go into a steakhouse, they are expecting possibly to get an opportunity to have a pasta. A lot of people are throwing in some bespoke sushi.
Mm.
And it's becoming quite competitive in that specific market from that point of view.
So have you also kind of launched into the new markets, or do you really focus on your meat?
We have been, our decision was purposefully to focus on what we do. So mm-hmm. to that end, we brought out a few ranges of imported meat and different kinds of Wagyu steaks and different tomahawks. So our growth in our menu is still more in the meat side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an ongoing debate that myself and my partners have. And I think in the near future, we might be branching out into a couple of different items to give different options. You know, a lot of our, some of our biggest business, particularly in Melrose Arch, are the air crews. And the air crews come in tables of 15 to 25 people. And there's mm-hmm. a good chance that 4 or 5 or 8 people are going to either be vegetarian, dare I say vegan, or looking for something a little
dare
bit
you say,
different.
Dare you say. In your restaurant, a vegan, yeah, I get it. And so your, from a supplier point of view, have you always had the same suppliers? Have you had consistency with that? Have you had to change over the years?
So that's one of my biggest focuses is we build relationships with our suppliers and we create a loyalty. And particularly in markets like the meat market that can go both up and down in price and availability, and certainly around the October, November, December period, we're very consistent with them, so they're not going to let me down. When we'll be the first people that they will support
for sure
when times are tough in terms of availability, because we support them to a large degree throughout the year. And I'm not the kind of person who's going to move from supplier to supplier for 5 rand here or 2 rand there. I believe
always
in the big basket,
yeah, for sure.
And and it's about loyalty. So you're going to go to the guy who's going to jump in their vehicle at 7 o'clock on a Saturday night and drop off something because they're short delivered. That's the kind of person
for
we're
sure
supporting.
I also have that in my business and I value it so deeply. I mean, I can phone a guy on absolutely Sunday morning at 6 o'clock and say, "Eek, I need salmon," and he's there, you know. Saul, can you stay on the line with us? I want to talk about Fornos with you, but I've just got to stop for an ad break. Is it okay that you stay on the line for a few minutes?
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Saul Mervis, we're talking to you about the Grill House. And very different to the Grill House is bakery and baking. What made you foray into that side of the world, into that side of the taste buds? Talk to us, tell us.
Yeah, again, another interesting question. So the opportunity came to us. We weren't looking for it. And again, the Fornos brand is a brand that's been in the market for 35 years. It was created by Harry, who was an incredible human being. And it was a really attractive to us because there are not a lot of businesses in our sector, in our market, that have been around for so long. The last couple of years, it was, for a number of reasons, taking a little bit of strain, and for that reason it came, the offer came to us, myself and my fellow, we looked at it and it looked attractive to us. We're very keen as a contact sport. It's really but we are enjoying it. We're up for the challenge, and when you say it's very different, it is and it isn't. Hospitality and food
for sure
has a lot of commonality right across the spectrum, a little bit comfortably, and we're finding nice synergy between the businesses as well.
For sure. I always say hospitality is, it's in your blood, it's in your heart, it's in your soul, and if you can do one side of it, you can do another. I think we've lost you.
I mean, that's also an interesting word, hospitality, because there's a big difference. Are you there?
Yeah, we're here. We just were having. Can we hear you, Craig? Okay. We good? Yeah, we can hear you now.
I was just saying we bandished the word hospitality around loosely, but it's a very important word, and I think a lot of people don't know the difference between the word service and the word hospitality. And you know, we always say service is the kind of thing you get from a vending machine. You can pop in your 10 rand and a Coke drops out, and that's service.
For sure.
But hospitality is so much more about how you make people feel.
And it's about the connections that you make with your customers,
for sure.
So what have you loved about this whole new industry?
100%. And I think, Dolores, you know that better than anybody.
For sure. I mean, I always say that hosting's in my blood. I love hosting.
You're the best at it. I guess that we're finding it exciting because we're on it for us. We have just last Friday opened a new one in that very exciting new corner of Four Ways Mall called The View. And it's, for those of you who want to go and have a look, I encourage you to. It's just got a beautiful new fresh, clean, modern, special, recognize that you are in a Fornos. I'm currently, as I speak to you, sitting in a car park in Vereeniging. We're about to launch a really quirky standalone Fornos just outside Vereeniging. Hopefully next week, Monday, we'll be opening that. And then we have two other interesting sites on the card. So
that's it's amazing.
From having been in this space where we've sat still for quite a long time, now we
you're moving,
quite aggressively expanding, which is it's terrifying, but we're having fun.
So two questions I'm going to ask you. What when you're in a grill house space, what's your go-to meal that you want for yourself? And I have to tell our listeners that you happen to be married to a vegetarian. Am I correct? I love that because I love the fact that you're surrounded by meat and she's into her chickpea lentil curry. But give us your take on your favorite meal. And then on the flip side, tell us when you walk into a Fornos, I mean, I know I'm a big nusher, but what's your go-to grab? What taste do you love? What would you go for with a cup of coffee? So just give us your take on those two. I think people always want to know what people in the industry love to eat. You there, Saul?
If I'm ordering in the grill house, I'm going to have a pepper crusted ribeye, medium rare. Have I gone again? Or have you got me back?
No, we got you. We got
Hello?
You.
Hello.
We've got you.
So I'm on the grill house. I'm ordering a pepper crusted rib. I'm ordering a pepper crusted ribeye, medium rare, with a side of sliced tomato and onions and some spinach.
Amazing.
When I'm at Fornos, because I'm not such a big carbs kind of person. And just grab a little cocktail sausage roll from the cabinet on my way between the kitchen and the front of house, and I shouldn't be saying that.
You shouldn't be saying that. You should be saying you're going for some fancy croissant or something like that. We lost Saul, but that was great talking to Saul Mervis. Thank you for your time. Good luck with all your openings, and we'll chat to you again soon.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
We're talking food. We're talking bowl food for me. I'm going to share with you a salad that I have been doing lately also, a quick and easy salad. And, you know, recently I did a cooking demo for some newlyweds, just a bunch of girls who were just new and fresh in the kitchen. And one of my kind of tips to them, and I think it goes for anyone, is people really want simple, wholesome food. But if you're having people over, or you're doing a Shabbat dinner or something special, and you just add in one dish that looks a bit special, just a something, a side dish, a salad, just adds that extra pizzazz to your table, and people think you've just gone that extra mile and made an effort, which you have. So this is a very easy, crunchy salad. You're going to take a can of chickpeas, rinsed and drained, a half a cup of feta cheese crumbled, a third of a cup of dried cranberries, a quarter cup red onion, very finely diced, two celery sticks, very finely chopped, a quarter cup of fresh parsley, and you're going to literally mix that all together. To that, you're going to make a very simple lemon vinaigrette, 3 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, 2 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice, and you know my take on the fresh side, 1 teaspoon of honey, and if you want, you can use a date honey, and a good grinding of salt and black pepper to taste. I add black pepper to almost everything. I'm a peppery person. I love that. Some people say I add too much pepper. Some people say I add too much sugar. It's all personal, but this is quite a tart dressing. The sweetness really is going to come from the honey. To make it a bit more bulkier, if you wish, for the salad, you can add a chopped cucumber, which I peeled and diced, toasted walnuts or pecans, a handful of fresh mint, and an extra handful of baby spinach or rocket, which you've rinsed and gently torn up and added to bulk up your salad. And there you have a beautiful salad to add to any table, to any offering, and it goes with meat, with fish, with anything. So while we're talking this week, I'm sure so many of you are making fish dishes and pastas. I'm going to share with you my very quick potato wedge recipe. We do a lot of potato wedges. I love doing baby potatoes with a lemon and herb crust. But just for everyday weekday meal, take your regular potatoes, skin on, rinse them thoroughly, cut them into wedges. To that, you're going to add some olive oil, the equivalent of about 3 tablespoons, some crushed garlic or 3 garlic cloves that you've minced, sprinkle it over, 1 teaspoon of dried oregano, 1 teaspoon of paprika. I love the sweet paprika. a quarter teaspoon of garlic powder, and of course your staple, your salt and black pepper. And for this I do love to use a Maldon salt. As I've said before, when you're cooking and you're throwing some salt into a pan of a sauce, you can use just regular table salt, but when I do this kind of a roast dish, I love to use my Maldon salt and black pepper nicely ground. To that you can add some lemon juice, a generous squeeze of lemon juice over, and roast them in the oven for about an hour, just before, I'd say 10 minutes before ready. Add to this, if you're having a milk meal, a quarter cup, your quarter cup of crumbled feta cheese and 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh parsley. How easy is that? And it makes for delicious, tangy roast potato wedges. Of course, if you're doing a meat meal for a Shabbat or for a chag and you wanted parov, you can just leave off your crumbled feta. Having said that, I've been using a lot of the vegan cheese. I've been using a lot of the vegan parmesan. Some of the cheeses taste a bit nutty and taste a bit not like so cheesy, but the parmesan is actually great and it embellishes so many things. The other night, for example, I just did roast tomatoes, roast brinjals, and I had a chicken dish, and we grated some of the vegan parmesan on hand and added some toasted almonds to it, and it was a beautiful, nutty, warm dish, and just that vegan cheese just added something special to it. What next can I share with you? Well, we're talking winter, and we're all feeling sometimes a bit dry, and our skin sometimes gets dry, and we're all padding on extra creams and wondering why our skin gets dry when we're sitting next to fires and heaters, which really does draw the moisture from our skins. So I found this one. It said a retinol rainbow salad, everything you need for your skin, but on a plate. So let's try this together. 5 carrots, which you've ribboned with a special peeler. And just by the way, I've ordered so many amazing peelers on Temu. It's amazing the different peelers you get for cabbage, for carrots, for peppers, for everything. And I've got a host of them now, and we all use them so joyously in the kitchen. Makes such a difference, just different shapes. So there's a handy hint for you all. So we've got 5 carrots, which we've ribboned, 1 English cucumber, which we've ribboned, 1 cup of red cabbage, very thinly chopped, thinly shredded, 1/2 cup of pomegranate seeds, 1/4 of a red onion, again thinly sliced, 1/2 bunch of flat leaf parsley, 4 spring onions, chopped quite finely, 3 garlic cloves, which you've minced, or you can use the chopped garlic, 2 tablespoons of pumpkin seeds, 2 tablespoons of sesame seeds. How delicious does that sound? Mix it all together, and for your dressing, you're going to use 2 tablespoons of sesame oil, 2 tablespoons of a good soy sauce, 2 tablespoons of rice vinegar, the juice of 1 lemon, so you squeeze the juice of 1 lemon, 1 teaspoon of honey, and again, I love to use the date honey when I can get my hands on it, 1 tablespoon of spicy chili crisp, and for that, there's so many on the market now from across so many different brands. We're getting all these beautiful chili crisps, onion crunch, so many available, and a good grinding of Maldon salt to taste. Yeah, there you go. You're going to ribbon your carrots and cucumbers till thin. You're going to sprinkle on your salt. Drain off the excess water from your carrots and cucumber before you add your other vegetables. Toss everything together. Pour over your dressing. Eat immediately. And I say that because you won't be able to actually wait. It's such a delicious salad. And as they say, they call it retinol rainbow on a plate. We're going to turn soon to Reuven Genish of Friends Bakery. Who we're going to talk to about Middle Eastern delicacies over this week. Is Reuven already on the line? He's not on the line yet. So while we're getting him on the line, I'm going to share with you one more beautiful recipe for a very, very quick salad. I see that watermelon is still available and on the market. And if you don't want to use watermelon here, the other day I used the sweet spunspek, which was delicious to say. We think it's only a summer fruit, but it really was available and so delicious. So 2 cups of cubed spunspek or watermelon, 1 cup of English cucumber sliced into thin rounds. To that you're going to add a generous sprinkling of virgin olive oil, 1 tablespoon of lime juice, 1/4 teaspoon of chili powder or any chili spice that you have, and 1 tablespoon of fresh mint. I always add a little sprinkling of Maldon salt. You're going to toss that all together. You can crumble some feta or ricotta over that. There you have a delicious side salad. So while we're talking salads and on your plate, platters on your plate, we're going to talk to Reuven Genish of Friends Bakery. Welcome, Reuven, to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. I know we've chatted before, but today we're talking the 9 days. We're talking milky meals. We're talking simple but delicious food. And what always comes to mind is a delicious falafel. So before we launch into your secrets and your repertoire of falafel, talk to us about what I know that who takes claim of the falafel. Is it Greek? Is it Lebanese? We say it's Middle Eastern. We all want to own the falafel, but are there stories about its origin? Is it a humble origin? How did it evolve? What do you think?
The truth is that the falafel came from Egypt.
Okay.
It was a food for the worker. So it was it's because it's filling.
Yes.
Very much. So the people of Egypt used to eat a falafel with full in the morning, meaning it was very cheap food
and filling.
But it was keeping them. Yeah, it's very much filling, and then it kept them for the whole day.
Mm-hmm.
So there it's come from there.
Okay.
But then it's spread to all the Middle East,
yes,
all the Arab world, and obviously to Israel as well.
Yes.
And in Israel, they perfected. They turned it into delicatessen. They putting so much more than, you know, in Egypt, they're using, let's say, with the beans, other type of beans, and chickpeas.
Yes.
And each one of the country in the Middle East, they're using a different
mixture. So talk to us about the best mixture.
Sure.
Like, is there a best mixture for falafel?
For me, the best mixture is obviously in Israel. I've been in some Mediterranean countries.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is that Israeli one is the best. It's not only Israeli, it's in Israel. I mean, the Arab and the Israeli and the Jewish doing
for sure
very much the same kind of a mixture. They're using a lot of fresh herb, a lot of coriander, a lot of parsley, a lot of fresh garlic, and everything must be fresh, and you know, it's beautiful and good type of good quality of chickpeas as well.
Yeah.
And,
so talk to us about, I know for your falafel, you sell so many beautiful crispy falafel balls.
Yeah.
They're always consistent. So is your take on it chickpeas only? Or do you mix other herbs and spices always? We're not asking you for your recipe, of course. I'm just asking you to hint at really what makes a good falafel.
You see, we remain authentic to the recipe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's with a lot of fresh herbs.
Yes.
And that's basically about that. I mean, if you're putting the fresh and you're not trying to
cut corners,
make the taste that it will be suitable for the local, you know, for the South African. Because when we started with that, I remember that my father-in-law, may rest in peace, said to me, this is not the flavor of the South African. But I said to them, let's try it. And they loved it. And until today, since 1994, we're serving the same kind of falafel.
Yeah.
Since then, I make always the mixture.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, always the same mixture. And it's always tastes the same.
Yeah, it's for sure. Consistency is part of it. So tell me, you know what I love about the food? When you go to Israel, it doesn't matter if you're in the most upmarket restaurant or on a street corner, and I love street food more than anything. You always have your meze antipasta vibe. There's always hummus and tahina and baba ganoush and your peppers and your mushroom.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that it's such a universal kind of offering, that it's from the most haute cuisine to the street corner, it's always the same. But even here, you've kind of always managed to be consistent in your hummus, in your tahina. I mean, I think you must be the biggest supplier in South Africa for sure. But tell us, when you're making up a falafel in pita or in a laffa, what are the things that you add in? What are your must-haves that you want to give the customer?
Okay, see, everyone is individually the way that he likes it. There is a bar with sellers. So there is hummus, there is tahina, there is amba, there is chili. there is baba ganoush, there is a fresh Israeli salad, there is a pickle. So everyone like it, and it's very specific for each one. Mm-hmm. Every person like his falafel and is at his way. Like myself, I like the falafel hummus, mm-hmm. chili, a bit pickled, and falafel.
Okay.
That I will be able to enjoy the whole flavor. Sometimes when you're adding too many things, it's like take away the flavor
of
the falafel.
It's actually honoring the flavor of the one
yeah,
major
so
player.
I enjoy the falafel.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I enjoy the falafel itself, the crunchy of the falafel.
For sure.
Because when you're adding a lot of salads, it make it wet.
Yes.
So it's take away the crunch of the falafel.
Yes. And are you a lafa personally? Are you a lafa or pitta man? Which do you go
I
for?
I am a lafa person.
You're a lafa person.
I'm a lafa person.
Okay.
I'm a lafa person. Good. Although we're making as well beautiful pitta. But I am a lafa person.
Amazing.
Fine.
Thank you for sharing that bit of information with us, and good luck. I'm sure you'll be selling many falafels over these 9 days. Thank you, Reuven. That was Reuven Genish from Friends Bakery.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
We're talking food. We're talking recipes. My mouth is watering at the thought of a beautiful, warm, crunchy falafel wrapped in a fresh lafa. Reuven's really the star of laffa making, and just the other day I did a beautiful wedding out in Mildersdrift, and I took his laffa makers with me, and there we had the machine and the two beautiful bakers, and we were making fresh laffa and filling falafel for people and shawarmas. It was just such a treat, and there's nothing better than fresh. I always say, if we can do it fresh, do it fresh. So another fresh, crunchy recipe that I'm going to share with you is a healthy cabbage stir fry, and in this time we can add in some seared tuna or some crispy fried hake or any fish you wish, or just keep it as a cabbagey stir fry. So here you would take 5 to 6 cups of green cabbage, very thinly sliced, 1 tablespoon of any neutral oil, avocado, canola or light olive oil. I always seem to opt for the avo or the olive oil. Olive oil really is one of my passions in life. 3 cloves of garlic, which you've minced, or if you don't wish to mince, you can just readily buy the crushed garlic. 1 teaspoon of fresh ginger. Toss that all together in a wok-style pan. And for a sauce, add in 2 tablespoons of soy sauce or coconut aminos, whichever you prefer. 1 tablespoon of rice vinegar or apple cider vinegar. And as I say, don't get hysterical if something isn't in your pantry. For me, cooking is about pleasure and ease, and we should always have basics around us. So if you haven't got one vinegar, you can use another. It doesn't always make such a difference. 1 teaspoon of sesame oil. I love authentic sesame oil for this, as it just gives that nuttiness to the dish. 1/4 teaspoon of ground black pepper. So there you're going to mix your cabbage, your carrot, your onions, your some torn coriander. You can add your nuts, and to that you're going to add some ramen noodles. So if you can't get the ramen noodles, you can use any noodles that you can find, the thin spaghetti, whichever suits you, but there are ramen noodles on the market. And you're going to whisk together a delicious dressing, which you can then make it into a salad, or you can use it as a hot warm dish. So for your hot sesame dressing, you're going to use the soy sauce, the rice vinegar, some honey or maple syrup, 1 tablespoon of your sesame oil, olive oil, some grated ginger, and your garlic. Mix it all together, and there you have a delicious, heartwarming stir fry. I did it the other night. I added in some beef strips. If you don't want to add in beef strips, you can add in, as I said, some crispy hake strips or seared tuna. If I was doing the seared tuna, I wouldn't think that I would toss it in. I would kind of lay all my stir fry on a big platter and top the dish with seared tuna. I love buying seared tuna, and again for that, a teriyaki sauce. We make teriyaki sauce all the time. Soy, lime, olive oil. You can even add a dash of something sweet if you wish. A little dash of maple syrup goes a long way with it, some brown sugar, and just your combination of how you love your teriyaki. I use teriyaki on fish, on chicken, on salmon, always delicious. Okay, let's move on and talk about some form of a cracker to eat with our delicious hummus and tahinas that we were talking about. So here, these are zucchini crackers, very healthy, very easy to make. literally takes 15 minutes to prep, cooking time 35 minutes, your whole total time an hour to make this. I love dishes like this. And if you make them in bulk and keep them in an airtight container, it goes such a long way. So to make some beautiful crispy zucchini crackers, take two medium zucchinis, which is the equivalent about 2 cups grated. Of course, you're going to leave your skin on for this. 1 cup of rolled oats or a cup of oat flour. I particularly used the rolled oats for this one. 1/2 cup of grated Parmesan cheese. And if you want to make it purée, remember I spoke about the vegan Parmesan cheese available. But for this, the real deal, there's nothing better than Parmesan cheese. 1 large egg beaten. 1 tablespoon of olive oil. 1 teaspoon of dried thyme. 1 teaspoon of dried oregano. 1 teaspoon of garlic powder. And 1 sprinkling of salt. You're going to mix all those ingredients together, grate your zucchini, squeeze out the liquid as much as you can, make your cracker mixture. So in a bowl, you're going to combine your zucchini, your oats, your Parmesan, your egg, your olive oil, all the herbs and spices. Mix it well. Literally what I did is I didn't even break them up into crackers. I spread it over a piece of parchment paper, put it in a preheated oven at 180, and baked it for 20 to 25 minutes, just as the edges began to brown. I then removed it from the oven and broke it into very rough squares. If you prefer neatness, you can use a pizza cutter and cut it into triangles or circles or whichever shape you want. Return to the oven and bake for another 10 to 15 minutes until crispy and golden. And there you will have delicious zucchini crackers to go with any mezze platter.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
You're back talking kosher cravings, and before I sign off, I'm going to share with you something else I found, or someone shared with me. One of my dietitian nutritionist friends said that we get so many messages every day about what vitamins to take and how to stay healthy, and we're all on this health path and for longevity, and of course we want to be fit and young and healthy, and it's so hard with all these messages coming to us. We don't know which cream to use or what to add in our face or what to put in our bodies. But here is a very simple worksheet of just 10 staple foods in our kitchen, so easy, that will always enhance our health. So, number one, ground flaxseed, 1 tablespoon every morning. Non-negotiable, she says. 2, blueberries every day. They target the exact inflammatory pathways that drive insulin resistance. So it keeps our sugar levels at the balance that it should be. 3, leafy greens before midday. The magnesium of leafy greens changes how our cells respond to insulin. 4, lentils and beans every single day. And I read this the other day too. So many countries where women have such beautiful skins and stay fit and healthy for so long, they live on lentils and beans every day. A fiber foundation, not a side dish. We must take lentils and beans more seriously. 5, walnuts, anti-inflammatory omega-3s that actually keep you full all day. Have a handful in the morning. It really keeps you full. Avocado, we know this, of course. Healthy fat plus fiber. Our hormones need this. Sweet potato adds fiber, gives us blood sugar support, and it's really an easy-to-eat vegetable. Oats, slow digesting and gut feeding. Stop skipping breakfast. Eat those oats. Broccoli fights inflammation at the cellular level. Eat it until you're sick of it. Number 10, soy, edamame. Tofu, tempeh, is the most anti-inflammatory protein source on the planet. Sometimes it gets such bad reviews and has such a bad reputation, but my friend says for no good reason. It's healthy, it's a protein, it's anti-inflammatory. So there we go. What's on this list? Everything that's good. What's not on this list? Supplements, shakes, meal replacements in boxes. So let's focus on real food. I wish you all a beautiful 9 days ahead. I wish you happy cooking. And I want to leave you with a thought that I saw the other day. You know, the Japanese, I just want to find it. The Japanese never throw away a broken bowl. I read they fix everything. They fix the thread of a bowl with a gold leaf. It's called wabi-sabi, that a cracked thing is still worth something. They have an art called kintsugi. Broken bowls get fixed with gold, so you can actually see where they broke. The repair of the bowl is the whole point. So a message for all of us, waiting to be perfect or even to be perfect in any sphere of our lives. We all sometimes think we have to be the perfect hostess, be perfect in the kitchen. Every dish has to be perfect. Not so. Don't be scared of taking the extra steps, and don't be scared of imperfection. A cracked thing is still worth something. Something not perfect can still be delicious. So fix your bowl, put it out, and fix the rest later if you really have to. Have a beautiful week ahead, and we'll chat again soon about kosher cravings.